The next case of the day is number 024274, Barbara Lathis against the Attorney General. Mr. Horn.
May it please the Court, my name is Stanley Horn, and I'm here on a case which is similar in some respects to a case we argued last week in the case of Bronish 024264. This is a case of first impression in the question of whether or not this court has jurisdiction in part to determine the issues of hardship and other issues in a NACARA situation. The case began by the issuance of an order to show cause under the immigration law prior to the passage of IRA-IRA. When IRA-IRA was passed, it changed the law with regard to suspension regarding the issuance of a charging document and the criteria used to determine whether or not someone could stay in the United States based on hardship. It also eliminated this court's jurisdiction to review issues of discretion. And if that were the law today, I would agree that this court did not have jurisdiction. However, subsequent to the passage of IRA-IRA, another law was passed, the NACARA law, which covered people from Eastern Europe as well as certain groups from South America. What the NACARA law did is it related all the criteria back to the original law under Section 240 of the original immigration law. Under IRA-IRA, no one could apply for cancellation of removal because of hardship to themselves. Moreover, they had to show that there was an extreme and unusual hardship to a qualifying relative.
There isn't too much time. And so let me ask you this, Mr.
Sure.
Horn, because you stated a number of times that Ms. Lash moved to reopen, she procedurally goes back in time to the moment in which the immigration judge found her deportable. And what I need to know is what authority there is for that definition.
Well, because what happened was that when the conclusion of the case happened, she was under IRA-IRA, no longer is anyone deportable. They've cleaned up the language, and now everybody is removable. Okay. When the judge concluded her case, he ordered her deported. Even under NACARA, he ordered her deported. So even the judge believed that it related back to the order to show cause. The government never appealed that decision and said, no, she's not deportable, she's removable, because if she's deportable, there are certain consequences attached. For example, if you're deportable under the old law, you cannot return for 5 years. If you're removable, you can't return for 10 years. So everyone believed that it related back to the original order to show cause. No charging document was ever issued other than the original order to show cause. Now, NACARA provides that when someone stays in the United States, and Congress obviously recognized this issue, that when someone stays in the United States, even past the time that they were ordered deported, they could have an opportunity to reopen their case, and it goes back to the original document. All the restrictions that one finds in IRA-IRA, either with regard to the transitional rules or the rules covering cancellation of removal, are not applicable to someone who applies for relief under NACARA. Now, if they're allowed to apply for suspension of deportation and the criteria for suspension of deportation are much less than for cancellation of removal, obviously this court has jurisdiction because everyone is operating on the pre-IRA-IRA statute. They're operating under the old Section 240 of the old immigration law, which existed prior to the passage of IRA-IRA. Congress recognized this when they passed NACARA because they said they apply the rules of suspension and not the rules of cancellation. Now, assuming that this court has jurisdiction, and I believe they do, then we have to look at whether or not the judge abused his discretion in determining that this woman didn't qualify for suspension of deportation for two reasons. The first reason is that she didn't have good moral character. Now, in order to get suspension of deportation, you must have three things. One, you must be in the United States 7 years at any time. There's no stop time rule as provided in IRA-IRA. So she could have the 7 years accruing up to the time of the hearing. That's not an issue. She clearly had that time. The second issue is whether she was a person of good moral character. And the judge ruled that she was not a person of good moral character because she stayed here after the deportation order was issued. In fact, she stayed here much longer. She came here in 1990, and she stayed until the time of the hearing. If the judge is correct, now, first of all, NACARA provides that even though there's a deportation order entered and one did not leave, it provides to allow someone to move to reopen their deportation case. If NACARA provides for that, and then the judge finds that because she didn't leave and that she's a person not of good moral character, then that provision doesn't mean anything, because one could apply, make a motion to reopen, your case is reopened, the court finds that you didn't leave when the deportation order was entered.
Therefore, you're immoral.
Pardon me?
And therefore, you're immoral. Wouldn't it also follow that if you came here illegally, you'd be immoral?
It doesn't matter. The court doesn't say anything about that. Because you could have suspension of deportation if you came here illegally.
What's the third one?
Pardon me?
You said there was a third one you wanted.
Now, the third one is whether or not, now, under cancellation removal, you must show that there is extreme and unusual hardship to a qualifying relative. Whether there's hardship to yourself is irrelevant. Under suspension of deportation, you have to show not extreme unusual hardship, but only extreme hardship either to yourself or to a qualifying relative. In this particular case, she has two U.S. citizen children who are American, who are clearly American, who don't speak Polish, don't read and write Polish, I go to school here in the United States, have no contact with Poland other than their grandmother who speaks Polish, so they may understand a little. If she's removed from the United States and sent back to Poland, obviously she may have to take her children with her. Now, in Poland, it's not like the United States when someone comes to a school and we have a provision where they gradually enter in, even if they speak a foreign language, and we make some accommodation for them. These children will be absolutely lost if they return to the country. They have no contact with any other country but the United States. Also, there's an economic problem. She's been here now since 1990. If she goes back to Poland, she has absolutely no way of sustaining herself. I pulled the last statistics from Poland, dated May 27th of 2004. Poland has an unemployment of 19%. That's almost 20%, 1 out of every 5, if my math is correct. 1 out of every 5 people in Poland are presently unemployed. How in the world can we expect a woman who hasn't been in Poland for 12 years, who has no particular job skill, able to sustain herself and her U.S. citizen children if she returns to Poland? She has no place to live. She's been here that long. She has no place to work. The children have no contact with that country. If this is not extreme hardship, forgetting about her for the moment, if this is not extreme hardship for her children, then I really don't know what extreme hardship would be. I'm going to say, and one more thing I want to say, that it is clear that everyone operated under the old rule that suspension of deportation operated because no order of removal was ever entered. It was an order of deportation, and the government agreed to the order of deportation at the end of the Nicara hearing.
Thank you, Mr. Horn.
May it please the Court, Your Honors. My name is Robin Bly. I represent the government in this matter. If I understand Mr. Horn's argument correctly, I think there's a little confusion. This woman was covered under her former deportation order. There's no question that she's not covered under the removal procedures that became into effect in 1997. But that doesn't mean that, and so she wouldn't be eligible for cancellation or anything like that. But her case was considered under suspension, which means that NACARA only gave her the possibility of applying for this relief. That's it. It did nothing to the suspension statute, so, you know, as to change the elements or anything like that. The three elements that are involved, the 7 years physical presence, which the INS had conceded in the immigration hearing that Ms. Blaise did have, is not at issue. The other two are whether they have good moral character and whether they can show extreme hardship to their children. What we're basically talking about here is whether this court has jurisdiction to review the judge's determination that Ms. Blaise would not suffer extreme hardship, or that her two United States children, who are the qualifying relatives, would not suffer extreme hardship if she was ordered deported. It's the government's contention that this case is covered by the transition rules, because this court has said that a motion to reopen is part and parcel of the deportation proceedings. They said that.
Excuse me for one moment, please. Ms. Lash argues that the grant of the motion to reopen reopens proceedings that began and fully terminated before ARERA's effective date, right?
Yes.
Okay. And the argument does have some appeal, it seems to me. I mean, because when the judge issued a deportation order in December of 91, didn't the court fully conclude the case?
Well, it did until she filed a motion to reopen, and then that reopened the proceedings, and then her final deportation order is this that we are now before the court under.
But if she did a meaningless act, I mean, was the case, the case was concluded in December 1991?
Yes, Your Honor, but she wasn't eligible for this until NACARA came into effect.
No, I know.
Effect. So, you know, I mean, if NACARA never would have come into effect, she never would have been eligible, and she would have eventually been deported. And the section which she applied for NACARA relief under, Section 203, provides, it discusses the transitional rules with regard to suspension of deportation. So, obviously, Congress did take into effect what law would apply, and under this, the plain reading, transitional rules apply. So we would argue that this court has no jurisdiction to consider the extreme hardship, because under the transitional rules, that jurisdiction was withdrawn. Even, Your Honor, even if she, and we're not conceding that this is the case, but even if the court decides that this case is covered under the old laws, we would contend that the immigration judge did not abuse his discretion when he decided not to render or exercise his discretion favorably in this case. He took into consideration the various factors, and part of that is her immigration history, which her immigration history is less than stellar. She was before the judge. She got more time than really would have been permitted in the first place for voluntary departure. She was given 90 days instead of 60 days. Then she went to the INS, asked for an additional 90 days, I'm sorry, which would have taken her to Christmas of 1991. She basically falls off the planet after that. She changes her address, doesn't inform anybody, the INS or the immigration court, which was, she was required to do under the law. She worked illegally afterwards. The way she came to this country, she had gone to the U.S. Embassy in Poland, had asked for a visa to come. They denied it. She came to Canada, she got a Canadian visa, and then she was caught being smuggled over the border at the International Bridge in Detroit. These didn't really, you know, act in her favor. And also, the after-acquired hardships that she experienced, and that include, or even, not that her children are hardships, but the after-acquired things like her home, having children, being married, under the board case law in matter of Correa, are given less weight because they occurred after her final deportation order. And if you'd like to cite, I can give you that. So, I mean, we'd argue even under the abuse of discretion standard that the judge's decision was fully informed, that he didn't make any error, that this was not an abuse of discretion, and that the decision was rendered correctly. There are no further questions.
Thank you, Ms. Plager.
Thank you.
You have 1 minute, sir.
I just want to point out that NACARA says specifically that even though one has an order of deportation, they're allowed to reopen their deportation case. Now, why would somebody reopen their deportation case? You can't reopen a deportation case that's pending. Obviously, there has been a final order, and in many cases, in most cases even that I've handled, I've probably handled 100 or 150 of the NACARA cases, most of them have deportation orders, and it allows for a motion to reopen. If that makes, if they avoided deportation, and that makes someone not less than a person of good moral character, then the motion to reopen and the NACARA doesn't mean anything. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Hart. Indeed, our thanks to both counsel, and the case will be taken under advisement. The court has finished this morning's call, and therefore the court will rise until the next scheduled oral argument date.
Where's the meeting?